Michaela, would you like a quick roll call?
Please, I would appreciate it.
Good morning, good afternoon to everyone. On today's IRCP call on Tuesday the 12th of January, we have Michaela Nalon, Mikey O'Connor, Kevin Erdman, James Bladell, Barry Cobb, Paul Diaz, Michael Collins, Chris Chaplow. From staff, we have Marika Konings, Olaf Nordling, David Gieser, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. I do not have any apologies for this call, and if I could just please remind everyone to state their names before speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you.
Thanks. Right, good afternoon, everybody. Earlier today, Super Marika will have sent you out a spreadsheet. Did you all get that?
Yes.
Okay, or maybe I'll rephrase that question. Is there anybody who didn't get that? I'll take the silence to mean no. Originally, we had planned on putting the spreadsheet up on the Adobe Connect, but because of the way it has, you know, some various different tabs and what have you, that would prove to be a bit, little bit impractical. So everybody has a copy, so it would be useful if you could actually open the file. And I think David was going to walk us through some of this. Is that correct, David?
That's correct.
Okay. So David, if you could take over and talk to us about this wonderful bit of work you've done for us.
Mm-hmm. This is David Gieser, and if you look at the bottom of the spreadsheet, you'll see that we organized this using a variety of tabs. Registrar ranking by size, registrar ranking by company complaints, registrar domain name transfer data. We have a legend that defines the terms that we've used, the grand totals, which are displayed in both column and pie chart fashion, and then we have the individual monthly analysis totals from July 2009 through the end of November 2009. And so what I thought I'd do is start first with a tab called DN, domain name transfer data, and just briefly provide you with an overview of how we analyze the data. And much of this will be consistent with what we discussed a week ago, but now you have the actual document in front of you. And so you'll see as you examine that tab that the columns at the top start with the IANA ID, the registrar name, the contact email address at the registrar, the C-ticket department, and that's the category of complaint, the actual C-ticket number that our system generates, the date we received the complaint, and then in column G, the date that we forwarded the complaint to the registrar, which is typically within 5 to, in some cases, 7 days. But you'll notice in some cases that date is longer, in large part because we've received a response from the registrar indicating that they need additional time to investigate the complaint. And then as you move across the columns from H to R, those are the individual categories that were identified for purposes of documenting the specific transfer complaint or reason. And then finally, in the other category, there we captured information that was actually quite useful for ICANN, but probably is not going to be useful to this group. And then finally, at the very end, we wanted to keep track of how often transfers were completed, and if a transfer was not completed, there's a reference in that column accordingly, which simply says no. At the very bottom of that spreadsheet, we ran the totals for all of the columns, and then we decided to group the totals first by grand total, and then we grouped the totals individually by month. And so if we jump to the grand total tab, and this is where we left off last week, you'll see a colorful pie chart there, and you'll notice that the three top areas of the pie chart are consistent with what we discussed last week, and that is that the two primary areas of complaints are EPP, auth info code, about 24%, the reseller category, again, about 24%, and then failure to unlock the domain, 15%. And so if you add those three together, you're clearly over 50% of the complaints fall into those three categories. There are other categories listed in the pie chart, and then if you want to look specifically at the data on a month-by-month basis, for example, if we click on the July tab, What we've done here is we've tried to rank the data by C-ticket transfer complaint category in descending order. So the most common reason for a transfer complaint in the month of July is listed at the top, and then as you scroll down, you find that, for example, in July, WHOIS issues, there are only 4 complaints received regarding WHOIS issues. And that pattern repeats itself in August, September, October, and November. And so as all of that data came together, the first thing we did was we just did a quick registrar ranking by complaints. And that's the second tab on the left on the bottom. And in that particular tab, when you open it up, you'll notice that, again, this is ranked by number of complaints. So at the very top, our largest, registrar who received complaints was Enom at 171 complaints during that five-month time frame.
One question. In this listing, when you say Enom, is that all Enom accreditations or just the main Enom accreditation?
No, it's the entire family.
Why do you list GoDaddy separately from Wild West?
Yeah, that should have been consolidated into both. I think that was just a, it was probably just an oversight on our part because we were supposed to consolidate these into families.
Okay, that's fine.
So what we did is we ranked the complaints, starting at the top with the highest number of complaints per registrar for that five-month period of time. We added a column for domain names under management, and then we calculated a percentage of transfer complaints by the size of registrar. And you'll notice as you scroll through this list of over 100 registrars, that the numbers start high at 171 and they go down to essentially one complaint. You'll also notice that the second category here is registrar not identified by the complainant, and there were 158 of those complaints. And we're going to be making some changes to our system to address instances where the complainant fails to identify the registrar. But it's also interesting to note that in many of these cases, the information received was also, transmitted to us through email. And as a result, I think there's another system enhancement that we'll need to budget for in this coming fiscal year so that when that information is received via email, we have a way to follow up with the complainant so that we can specifically tie it back to a registrar. And then if you go to the very first tab on the bottom left, registrar ranking by size, we took that same data and we just simply re-ranked it based on the percentage of transfer complaints by size of registrar. And, of course, the ranking then changes. And this data, I think, is useful, as is the registrar ranking by complaints. And so you'll notice now that, for example, our top 25 list has dramatically changed. But you'll see a couple of names in there that are still consistent with, let's say, the top 25 ranking for registrars by complaints. And so what we found in the data, as you've seen here, is that for 5 months, we believe that this is a very statistically accurate analysis that can be very useful to the working group as we think about what are we going to do next year with this information. And so I can give you just a quick overview of some things that we're doing, and then open it up for questions. I have a meeting scheduled with Enom in the first part of February to specifically review their IRTP transfer processes, and not just because they were the number one registrar listed on registrar rankings by complaints. That meeting had actually been scheduled earlier in the year, but now is, a wonderful time to sit down with the Enom compliance team as well as their operational team and get a better understanding of the processes that they deploy successfully or not, as the case may be, to handle and manage transfer requests. And my plan is to summarize that information and then put it in a document that will be useful for this working group so that the working group will get the opportunity to get behind the curtain a bit and actually learn more about how Enom, for example, handles transfer complaints. Perhaps another registrar on the working group would want to produce a similar summary document to help facilitate discussion and understanding of the process. But if not, I'll certainly have something for this group probably by the middle of February after our early February visit with ENA. The second thing that we've identified from this is that we clearly need to automate this activity, and so we're working on a plan right now to budget for the software that we need to do this work on a continuous basis without having to go through the extraordinary manual effort that you see in front of you here in terms of collecting this data and then analyzing this data using an Excel spreadsheet. And then I think third. There's as you look at the percentages of transfer complaints by size of registrar, although those numbers are minuscule in terms of the percentage, they do begin to tell a story. A story that I think clearly identifies that every registrar is struggling at some level, be it a small number of complaints or a somewhat larger number of complaints, but every registrar is struggling with the transfer process, and so. It, in my view, it supports what we talked about earlier, that information education, further standardization within this industry around how transfer complaints are handled could be very useful. Certainly if a clearinghouse or some other central point of contact were utilized effectively to not only communicate information but to oversee the management of transfer complaints, perhaps that might be one solution from either a policy perspective or an operational perspective that could add value, to the nature and number of complaints that we see in front of us. Our goal over time is to reduce the number of transfer complaints, but I think, as I mentioned before, the run rate here appears to be pretty steady year over year in terms of the number of complaints we're receiving. And so, again, on average, we're looking at about 200 or more complaints per month, and that number has been generally flat to somewhat increasing over time, and so it tells us that there's work to do, and it also tells us that that this working group hopefully will begin to address some of the underlying problems associated with at least those top three categories of transfer related issues, and perhaps our work can go deeper than that. So if there are any questions or comments. I'm open to those.
Olaf here, just a very sort of small comment, but anyway, if you look at the very first tab, registrar ranking by size, well, actually, there you start with the lowest scores on top. So those with the fewest complaints in relation to their size come up first. So actually, it's the lowest 25 that are, well, should be the worst within inverted commas.
Yeah, we're actually going to put a different ranking chart together where we're going to take the domain names under management and establish breakpoints around 500,000, a million, more than 2 million, and then re-rank this information and data around a better chart or graphic that shows categories of domain names under management.
But you follow what I'm saying. I would like to see the chart really in upside down.
And I'm sure we can do that too, Olaf. It's just a question of just flipping the data.
Yeah.
Mikey.
Thanks, Michele. This is Mikey. And David, thanks to you and your team for putting this together. I had Olaf's same comment, which is that the first tab is in the opposite order than the second tab. And so in the first tab,
if you run a filter for sorting it, it'll come out a bit better, I think. Mikey.
Well, yeah, but I think that the conclusions that David was reaching were in error because he's not aware of the fact that in one of the lists the worst performers are at the top, and in the other list the worst performers are at the bottom. So just to amplify Olaf's point, this isn't talking about the splits business, David. This is just recognize that in tab one, the order is reversed, and all you need to do is resort the page. I mean, I did it reflexively because I just assumed that that's what was being attempted. But, David, you started to draw some conclusions from those lists, and you need to be aware of the fact that they're in opposite order. That's all.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mikey.
Now,
that's right.
In terms of some conclusions to draw from this, I emphatically support your notion that this process should be automated and be going on all the time, and hopefully published on a fairly regular basis, because this falls squarely in the that which gets measured gets done category, and clearly this is helpful for registrars and registrants to see this. Is the intent that this is going to go into our report? Presumably, since this has gone to the list, it's out in the wild on the internet and is not secret data, right?
At the moment, this information has only been, published with this working group, and so our team will, as you pointed out, clean up the data here on this particular tab and put it in reverse order, and then our intent was to post this information on the contractual compliance webpage so that it would be available, for the public's review and use through our website.
I think, David, what he's getting at is that it's already public because
already
the IRTP list archive is public.
Okay. Then again, the only thing we need to do is just, clean up the spreadsheet.
Yeah, you may just want to post a note to the list clarifying that so that when somebody reads the archive, they get a reminder that this data is to be reviewed with a certain amount of caution, given the fact that those two pages are in reverse order. Because there are people who already have the spreadsheet who may not notice that.
Noted.
Thanks.
So I would say, in David's support, if the data itself is correct, it's just the order it's presented in isn't.
Yeah, and I didn't notice it at all until the conversation, and then...
Well, I have the advantage of having seen previous iterations of the spreadsheet. James.
Hi, thanks, Michele. And like Mikey mentioned, David, I want to extend thanks to you and your team for putting together this analysis. And I have a couple of questions, so if I can beg your indulgence for a moment here, I'll go through them. I've written them down. I tried to hold them all for the end of your presentation. So the first question was, what is the advantage do you see in setting up breakpoints versus categories of registrar size versus working with the actual numbers? Is it because those numbers of names under management are constantly changing, or they're difficult to tabulate, or I guess what is the... Because to me it seems relatively straightforward to use the raw data and then work from there, and it gives you a higher degree of accuracy and resolution in understanding the problem.
Yeah, we were just simply thinking that there are other views of the data that might be useful, and not only to the working group but to the community. And so, one suggestion from my team was to use a domain name under management ranking scale as one way to display the data. But you have the raw data, and to your point, you can work with that raw data as effectively as if it were displayed under a different view, based on number of domain names under management.
Right. Well, okay. And I guess I don't have any strong feelings either way, except that if you were to go with the idea of categorization, I think that could possibly cut against my employer, which is larger, I think, in terms of name under management than the next two or three or four competitors combined. So I think that we would either need our own category, or I would recommend we go with the raw data. And the second part of that is, you know, I found that rather than using percentages, when the numbers get to infinitesimally small, sometimes it's useful to use just multiply them out by, you know, 10 to the 4th or something, and call it parts per 10,000 or just parts per 100,000. It seems to throw everything back into a scale that sits a little bit better with human eyeballs.
That's a good suggestion.
I think you mentioned something about, maybe I just misinterpreted, but is the goal of this group to continue to pursue or to ever achieve zero complaints with transfers? Because my point to that is that, you know, we have millions of names under management, and several other registrars are in that size category as well. And transfers are not only a complex process, but they are also one that has various security vulnerabilities that we've already that we're discussing in this group. So it seems as though there should be what I would call a natural level of incidents or natural frequency of incidents where we would be concerned that you know, that we should be getting humans involved to investigate a certain percentage. And I don't say that in a way that sounds defeatist or cynical about our about the mission of this working group, but I just think that that's to be expected, and that's something that we should always be looking to reduce, but we should be realistic that no policy is going to wipe that out entirely. I put that question to the group as opposed to just compliance.
Well, I would agree as well. I don't think you're going to ever get 100%. I mean, we see things all the time where, and not just in GTLDs, but across the board, where you have domain name is registered to a company and then there's an internal dispute between the directors. You know.
Okay.
Like, you know, there are two people who both own 50% of a company. They both want to do totally. They both want to do totally different things with the domain name. You know, yeah. We get stuck in the middle of that one. That's great fun. Mikey, do you have any thoughts on what James was saying?
Yeah, I was running right down the same tracks. This is Mikey. It seems to me that the next step in this is sort of a classic quality management topic. And the next, now that we have the first round of information, which is how many incidents happened, the next thing we need to know is the cause and the types of resolutions. Because now you set a goal, and you say the goal should be blah, not ever zero, because as James points out, in any process there's always going to be some noise. But what you need to do at this stage is find out the largest cause of the problem and solve that root cause. So this is back to David. Is there any thinking in terms of tracking the disposition and cause of the complaint? In other words, it's great to see this. I love this a lot, but the thing that would really be helpful is in those complaints, what was the problem that caused them to happen? And the only way to do that is to sort of track a post-complaint resolution or disposition status. Do you have any plans to track that kind of information?
We've certainly thought about that, and one of the enhancements that we're going to be proposing for the coming fiscal year is a modification to our C-ticket system that would allow us to track more information that we receive from registrars when they respond to our 5-day notice. Because today our system doesn't allow us to collect and or track that data. And so the budget for next fiscal year is going to include a request for, you know, again, for some funding to make some modifications to our custom C-ticket system here.
This is Mikey again, just following up. And this is to the group as well. Maybe what we ought to do is formulate some sort of recommendation out of this group supporting that budget request so that poor David isn't going up against the jaws of budget-slashing bosses unarmored.
Yeah, Mikey, thank you. I would absolutely appreciate that assistance. as many of you know, this is going to be a difficult budget cycle for ICANN, and so all budget requests are going to be reviewed very intently, and community support for particular budget items or initiatives would be greatly appreciated.
I'd be happy to sign on to anything like that, and then I'll drop off here.
It's Michele, just in terms of the ticketing system, and I don't want to get kind of drawn into this too deeply, but David, do you have an outline of what you need this solution to be able to do?
We have pieces of that. We do have pieces of that outline already prepared by my staff, and so we're actually consolidating that information right now because this is the start of ICANN's fiscal year 2011 budget process. And so for those of you who don't know, by February 1st, I need to have my first draft budget completed and presented to executive management at ICANN for review. So pieces of that exist, but we don't have all the pieces completed yet.
Right, it's just because the thing, I suppose, is that in some respects, I think I've said this has come up before, it sounds to me like your main problem to date has just been you need a decent ticketing system that can take input via email and via a web form.
I think we have a good system, but it's a system that needs incremental improvement in multiple areas, and so we're continuing to build on the foundation of the C-ticket system. But I do believe the foundation is strong. It's the additional data that we need to track and warehouse, and then the additional reporting capabilities that we need, a variety of tools, quite frankly, that can be either bolted on or built into the C-ticket system to provide a much more robust way to collect and analyze consumer complaint data.
So you're talking about warehousing data?
Well, if there's a way to improve...
Sorry, I was winding you up. I know.
If there's a way to improve, we're always looking
bad.
For... Yeah.
He's being bad.
I know. He's just taking he's taking advantage of the fact that it's early morning here in California.
Yeah, poor dear. Mikey, if your deadline is February, do you need a statement from us sooner than the stately pace with which our proceedings are likely to produce a report? Like, do you need a memo from us in the next 2 weeks? Or can it wait until the next round of your budget cycle? If your budget's due on February 1st, then a memo would be useful. I think we'd probably be able to put something together to help you with that.
Actually, a document prior to February 1st would be helpful because that's the first round of budget review, and as many folks know, that's management's first opportunity to ask questions and then to make recommendations in terms of how that budget is structured and to what extent those numbers are generally decreased as opposed to increased. So some form of written recommendation around improvements, ongoing improvements or modifications to our C-ticket system would be appreciated, yes, before February 1st.
Maybe we form a little subgroup gang and write something up real quick for review at the next meeting. Does that make sense, gang?
How about we don't hit a fly with a sledgehammer? How about Mikey, if you could throw together something very quickly, circulate it to the rest of the list, and if people don't have an issue with it, we'll agree on it.
Sounds like a plan to me.
I really don't want subgroups.
Oh, you're no fun. Everybody else has subgroups. Why don't you like subgroups?
Because I'd actually like my working group to be one that actually gets something done before all my hair goes gray.
Oh, you don't have very much hair.
Yeah, I know. That was the entire point. Moving on. I'm sorry, David. That Mikey is terribly badly behaved.
No, actually, it's been pretty entertaining. So I'm fine with everything that's happened so far.
Okay. Does anybody else have any other comments on the spreadsheet that David has circulated?
Yes, Chris here. I was just wondering, David, no, I think it's a great work, but is there any information about what was the ultimate resolution of the complaint, or is it just something that's been knocked back to the registrars to be sorted and then you haven't been involved after that?
There are instances, quite a few instances, where registrars will tell us specifically what they did to resolve the complaint, but that usually occurs after we, again, manually follow up with the registrar through an exchange of emails or in the exchange of phone calls, and that information is not you know, collected and kept in a central database. There are files that exist, but those are usually separate files that reside on, you know, one or more PCs, and that data again would have to be manually collected and analyzed if we wanted to go a little deeper into the specific activities or actions that registrars have taken to resolve the complaints that they've received.
Yeah, so this might be incorporated into the future system.
Correct.
Thanks, yeah.
This is Michele, just one observation. It would be useful, personally looking at the data, it would be useful to see what the actual final resolution was, because from my understanding, and I would appreciate it if you corrected me, David, you're classifying the complaints based on what the complainant is providing in terms of information. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So you're working on the basis that what they are saying to you is truthful and accurate.
That's correct. We forward that complaint on to the registrar, and it's the registrar then who makes the performs the investigative work required to make a determination on whether the complaint is valid or not, and then the registrar takes action or not, as the case may be.
So in that case, hypothetically speaking, I'm not saying that this is the case, but just, you know, being hypothetical, if, for example, if a complaint related to an EPP key, it could just as easily transpire that the registrant was, you know, copying and pasting in the key with a leading space or something silly. It could be any number of other issues. It might not actually be what is being reported.
It's possible. And to your point, as we begin to track the disposition of the cases, that will provide greater clarity. Now what I could do is go back into this data sample and pull out some files from each month and see if we can, you know, track them through to conclusion based on the registrar responses that we received and have, you know, filed, you know, in our working system, and see if that information would be helpful for this group.
Anybody got any thoughts?
Yeah, David? This is James.
James, Bond?
Yeah, thanks, Michele. And David, you know, we're going to keep pushing you towards you and your team towards omniscience. But it's a joke. I mean, we'll never quite get there. But I think it would be good to have some mechanism by which, if a self-reported transfer problem turns out to be incorrect or miscatalogued by the registrant, that the registrar has an opportunity to correct it. So if a registrant raises a complaint and says the registrar won't give up my auth info code, my EPP auth info code, and the registrar says no, it's a case where they had a typo in their WHOIS address, so it was getting sent to the wrong place. You know, it's a different problem than that was originally reported. So I think some sort of a feedback mechanism, either from the registrar or from your team capturing the disposition, as you mentioned, to change the category. So it's not quite such a self-reporting, self-diagnosing system. That would be great.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
I see. Hold on a second. Who was this? Michael Collins is on there.
Yeah, David. Not to beat you up on this, but I would have to confirm that. I think I'm also concerned that the resolution may be different than the initial reported problem. And for example, just last week, I think I mentioned at least online to on the side to a few people that I was having trouble with the transfer. That turned out to be a problem with me copying the off info code, and I was missing a character that was hard to see at the end, and it wasn't joining it with the off info code when I double clicked on it automatically. And you know, so would it,
sorry, did we just lose audio from him?
That was dramatic, wasn't it, the way he went away?
Am I still here?
I know, Michael, I know you like to make big exits.
That
I don't think that was intentional. Was it?
Am I gone?
Oh, now
no, you're back. You're back now.
Oh, well, I don't know where I was in my long-winded speech. I don't want to go over the whole thing again. But in any case, I'll just say that I agree that this could be skewed quite a bit. And there probably needs to be a category for, you know, just really dumb registrant doesn't understand simple instructions.
I'm not sure that's quite the category name we want on there. But
well, I'm only speaking about for my one potential complaint.
No, I think that even that one isn't really dumb registrant. It's simply, you know, this is quality management. What that is a root cause of a problem that probably a lot of people have. And sometimes it goes into best practices to suggest to people to use visible characters in systems that generate auth info codes, but it's not really dumb.
I will say, too, that...
Well, just as a point of information, guys, there's a VeriSign mandate the format of the EPP code.
Oh, so we can implement that.
I don't know about that, but...
Well, if there was data to support it. See, this is all the reason, all the more reason why you need that resolution data, so that you can say, aha, 40% of the problems that people wind up having are caused by character confusion in auth info code. Well, then you go to the VeriSign standard and you say, how's about we change it? I mean, this is quality management. Simple.
And just a comment from Barry Cobb in the chat. The discussion starts to fall within the realms of incident management and problem management. These two processes complement the ticketing toolset. They ensure that incident gets resolved, root causes found, and I'm not too sure what he means about validation of data entry. And validate the data entry, possibly. Barry, could you clarify what you mean?
Just basically to James's point that the reported incident matches the actual root cause and so that they sync up properly for reporting purposes.
Okay, perfect. We've got Chris and then James. Chris?
Yeah, thanks. Just a quick comment. It's interesting, isn't it, that where we started with the ASAC hijacking report with that sort of hair-curling information actually turns out to be only 3%. Of the problems in terms of complaints.
Ain't data the coolest thing, though?
No. What?
I love my data. You cannot move me. I stand fast.
James?
Yeah, thank you. And Chris, to that point, 3%. It may seem like a low number, but when we're talking about, 3% of houses are burglarized each year or something like that, I think it's, I think we need to be careful making that kind of drawing that kind of a conclusion, just because I think that we're not seeing, the attempted but thwarted hijacking attempts. Certainly that would never hit this type of data. And, it's still, I think if you are that one particular domain name registrant that has your name hijacked, it's a pretty devastating incident. So I just want to be careful that saying that means we shouldn't necessarily spend so much time talking about the security vulnerabilities in the transfer process, because I think they are important. But I wanted to get back to something Mikey said, and he said something about the format of the auth info code and I think it was Michaeli as well, the format of the auth info code specified by VeriSign. And to my knowledge, there are some rough limitations or guidelines, but the registrars actually generate the auth info code for each registration. And that raises an interesting point where Mr. Collins might have seen that he was making a user error when he was just copying and pasted the auth info code. The more conspiratorially minded of us might say that perhaps the registrar did that intentionally and put some ASCII characters in there that were, you know, difficult to see, like an apostrophe or a comma or something as part of the auth info code that a human wouldn't expect, but a computer would reject the transfer in order to just slow the process down and hope that a certain percentage of registrants would just give up on the transfer. So I think that I did something that maybe we could take a look at, Mikey, and of course, you know, me and my background, I'm not necessarily going to assume that was an error. I think that that may have, there's a possibility that that may have been by design.
This is Mikey. I would never have thought of that, but it does. I would support the notion that perhaps in the discussion in the report, this is a great example that we might want to talk about from several perspectives, one being this quality improvement perspective and making the user experience more reliable. But also, perhaps, I don't know if this would drive you folks crazy or not, but maybe we actually specify a standard be defined for that auth info code that is easily human readable and promulgate that out.
Simply enough, why couldn't they just be limited to the characters that are allowed in domain names? So,
well,
alphanumerican hyphens, done.
Yeah, except that, in fact, then you get into the confusion with 0 and O and some of that. There is actually a standard for the CAPTCHA kinds of characters, which is more restrictive than just ASCII because of the ability to confuse some characters. And so we might want to actually encourage a more restrictive set than just that's what's in domain names for that very reason, that you can actually improve data input quality and accuracy by eliminating a couple kinds of characters. I don't have the standard right at hand, but there's an ANSI standard out there for that that we might want to encourage people to follow.
Just as Michaela here, just I pulled up the email from VeriSign regarding the change in formats. As of 15th November 2009, the auth info code for all new common net registrations it has been set to a new password standard. The auth info will need to have at least 8 characters consisting of one number, one alphabet, and one special character. That is the thing. And the numbers are 0 to 9, and then you have, obviously, letters of the alphabet, which I'm sure you're all familiar with. And the special characters include apostrophes, commas, double quotes, colons, semicolons, greater than, less than, equals, ampersand, percentage, dollar, hash, at, and several other charming characters that are a pain in the neck to find on certain keyboards.
You see, this is the classic security dispute between usability and security. What they're following is the discipline of raising password security. And what they may have done is caused the problem that Michael Collins has, in that by insisting on special characters, they made it less human readable and thus less, you know, thus increased the probability of error. And, you know, this is a classic security discussion design debate that I think warrants at least some treatment in our report. And what would really be useful is let's presume that the complaint ticket system is perfect in every way and is now tracking resolutions of these complaints. If we saw an uptick in the kinds of error that Michael was describing, we would then have some data to be able to go back to VeriSign and say, maybe you should reconsider the standard for the auth info code and thus close the loop.
Okay. Marika and then James.
Yes, thank you, Michele. This is Marika. I just looked ahead at the other PDPs that are still outstanding on the IRTP-related issues, and actually noticed that nothing is specifically related to the auth info code. So as it doesn't fall specifically within the scope of this working group, which I think already has another quite a lot of other important issues to address, a possible alternative would be to consider making a recommendation that, you know, seeing the data and seeing the number of complaints relating to the auth info code for a future IRTP working group to take that issue on board as well and review how that can be improved or determine what the actual issues are related to those complaints and address it in such a way instead of maybe trying to deal with it within this working group.
One thing I would ask, Marika, is, I mean, surely if we the registrars were to all say to the registries, look, your auth info format is causing us more headaches than anything else, why can't you change it to something simpler? I mean, if we could get the registries to agree to that, would we really need to go through an entire PDP and God knows what else, three-letter acronyms that could drag on for years?
If that's the main issue and that's causing the, you know, the number one complaint with ICANN, and if we can solve it, of course, you know, I'd much rather try that we solve it in another way than a PDP. But I'm just wondering if indeed we know that that's the main problem that is causing all the complaints that ICANN receives in relation to that. So I'm just wondering, instead of, you know, maybe, you know, spending too much time within this working group, that indeed, you know, please follow the track by talking directly to the registries to address that issue, and maybe separately, you know, if that's not the only issue or needs some further investigation, to include it as a recommendation to the council, saying, look, we've noticed, you know, in discussing with compliance and reviewing the data, that this is one of the, you know, top three areas in which complaints are received. We don't see it on the list of issues that, you know, are still coming down the pipeline on IRTP. Maybe it's worth considering adding that and seeing whether there's something that can be done to, you know, reduce the number of complaints in relation to that.
Okay. James and then Mikey.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I'll let Mikey go because I just lost my comment there and I was engaged in a side conversation. So go ahead, Mikey, and then I'll put something behind you.
Okay. Just to follow up, I think that one of the concepts that I'd like to introduce is the notion of low-hanging fruit. This little auth info code thing isn't necessarily in the scope of what we're doing right now, but it's a darn good idea. And so, you know, to Michele's point, I think it would be great if that initiative could just run forward and the registrars sit down and formulate a little paragraph and fire it off to the registries, you know, looking up that ANSI standard for human use of complex strings. And you know, we noted in our report as either as just low-hanging fruit that we stumbled across in our analysis or in an appendix or something. But, you know, rather than wait for the IRTP process to handle it in a formal way, if we've got a good idea like this, let's just get the affected parties involved and go fix it.
James?
Yeah, real quickly, Michele, you were reading from apparently a bulletin or an announcement from VeriSign regarding requiring strong password conventions on auth info codes. And my question is, was that something they did unilaterally, or did that come through the RCEP process, or you know, where is that coming from? Because I think if we had had an opportunity to review and comment that in advance, I think some of us probably could have foreseen that would have increased the frequency of transfer problems.
I'm looking at the RCEP page now just to see if I can find anything, any information for you, James. I'm looking here. Hold on a second now. It doesn't say in this announcement that I've got from VeriSign where this came from. It doesn't say it at all, so I assume that that came from them. Is there anybody from VeriSign on this call? Is what's her name from VeriSign on the call today?
Excuse me, Barbara? This is the operator. Excuse me, are you needing operator assistance there?
No, thank you.
Apologies for the interruption.
That's okay.
The person to call is Barbara Steele, and
she's not on the call.
Yeah,
she's not on the call today. James, I'll forward you the email that I have here. But I don't know where this came from. I'm having a look at the RCEP list now. Maybe somebody from, does anybody from staff know anything about it?
This is Marika. I'm actually asking Craig about it, who's a registry liaison. If I hear something back from him before the end of the call, I'll let you know. And otherwise, I can maybe provide you with an update on the next meeting, if he knows anything more.
Right. As I'm looking on the RCEP page here and I can't see anything, it looks to me like it might have been just some kind of what they might have considered a minor operational change. Don't know.
Right.
Okay.
Well, that's why we have the RCEP, so that we can catch these things before they blow up on folks.
So this is Mikey and David. If you're still on the call,
still here.
This is a perfect example of a very constructive, very focused conversation based on good data. And it's this kind of data and the collecting and managing and providing of this kind of data that the ICANN community can benefit from. And I'll try and capture the essence of that, you know, in the little memo. But when you talk to your budget overlords, you might just refer them to this part of the MP3 and say, look, you know, this is a conversation where there's no battle at all. There's just clearly a problem that's causing errors in domain transfers, which is resolvable now that it's been identified through the analysis of good data. And what we really, really need is that subsequent to resolution part of your C-ticket system to be able to actually capture these resolutions and presumably track the trend, both when the change went in, you know, I would be willing to bet a nickel that if we had good data on domain transfers, that we saw an uptick in the kind of error that Michael was describing the moment that standard went in, because they lengthened them, they made them harder to type, and they made them harder to recognize with that change in their standard. And so this is just a final rant about the value of good data improving operational process in the organization.
Thank you, Mikey. I appreciate that. And as soon as you have that that draft memo or document together, you know, please send it my way.
Yeah, I'll put something together and circulate it to the list, and you should have it by this time next week.
Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. I just heard back from Craig, and he said that he's not aware that a request like that, you know, from any registry has gone through an RCEP process.
Okay. Any other comments or thoughts or reflections or anything? No? Silence has descended?
Anything?
I knew you'd have something, Mikey. God almighty, you'd ask. Okay. Does anybody, apart from Mikey, have anything they'd like to add?
Oh, you're hurting me.
I know. I do it so well. Just going back to the spreadsheet from David, which we were looking at originally. David, you have listed on one of the one tab you have listed registrar ranking by complaints, and then in the other tab we had the registrar ranking by size. Now I noticed one thing that kind of confused me a small bit in this particular version of the data of the sheet. Where's it gone to? Oh yes, you have the down the bottom. You have put all the terminated registrars together in one group.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Based on this, then none of the other registrars in this in the rest of the list were terminated.
Correct.
Okay. Just for my own I don't know if anybody else would kind of find this useful or not. It would be interesting, I suppose, to see if compliance issued something against the registrar in question. In other words, let's say, for example, if you have a particular registrar that compliance has already sent warnings or whatever you call them. What's the official thing?
It starts with a compliance notice and then it escalates from there into a breach notice.
Right. Okay. So, the thing is, obviously, if for example my registrant is completely inept and incapable of doing a copy and paste of an EPP code from point A to point B, that's hardly my fault, or GoDaddy's fault, or TwoCows' fault, or anything like that. But if I'm refusing to give the client, the registrant, the EPP code, then obviously I'm in breach of something. I'm just wondering, is there a way of collecting whether you've actually followed this up with the registrar? In other words, you know, this registrar here, you know, there is a problem, but we are dealing with it, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the way to do that is to go back and look at the manual files that we have around the disposition information that registrars provide to us when we contact them, and from those files we could determine how often we had to issue a compliance notice to a registrar who failed to take action after receiving the transfer complaint from ICANN. And then I know that there have been a few instances where we've had to escalate that issue into a breach notice, and I do know that there have been breach notices issued where failure to address or resolve transfer complaints is one issue among perhaps other issues that the registrar needs to take corrective action on, and then in many of those instances registrars respond affirmatively. Resolve those matters, and so the breach goes away because it's cured. But in some instances, as you've seen from the spreadsheet, registrars just simply fail to take that corrective action, thereby leading to non-renewal or termination. So we could begin to collect that information. We've got the information. We would need to analyze it and then present it in some format going forward. That would be useful not just to the working group but to ICANN. And the general community, and I think the best way to do that again is by enhancing or modifying the C-ticket system, so that we can have a much more robust way to collect and analyze disposition data, and then report on that through a variety of of different methods to get that kind of data that you're looking for, Michaela.
I mean, the thing, David, from my perspective, is I wouldn't want a situation to arise whereby that you're using a kind of a minor issue, a stick to beat somebody with. And I wouldn't want to, it's more a case of, for your own internal, how do I phrase this? If you're collating the information so that you have it to hand when you need to escalate it, rather than it being published willy-nilly, which I think could be more damaging to people rather than helpful. If that makes some kind of sense.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, let's say, for example, I drive my car to work every single day. I normally wear a seatbelt. Where am I going with that analogy? I was going somewhere with that analogy now, and I've lost my train of thought. I suppose the point being that if somebody there's a difference between somebody knowingly committing a wrongful act and somebody accidentally committing a wrongful act. And that, you know, that it would not be fair or equitable for, let's say, that if compliance starts to track all this stuff now, and next thing, there's a compliance notification sent against Enom or Two Cows or GoDaddy or ourselves, the next thing, that it's published everywhere, you know, GoDaddy are evil, Black Knight are evil, yada, 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 and it's simply because, you know, we weren't aware of something or we made some simple little mistake, as opposed to, you know, we set about actually doing something evil and wrong. Mm-hmm. If that makes any sense to you.
I follow your thinking. And our contractual compliance team, our goal is to work collaboratively with registrars. So, you know, all of the information and data that we collect here and that we use, we do that in an effort to establish corrective action plans, you know, and or programs with registrars so that, you know, these matters can be resolved, you know, short of a breach, you know, and or, you know, termination. So I can tell you from my viewpoint, we wouldn't, you know, misuse this information in the ways you describe, because again, our goal is to work constructively with registrars to solve these problems so that we don't have to breach, you know, and or terminate registrars that are performing according to the, you know, the expectations of the REA.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you. Anybody else have any reflections or thoughts on the spreadsheet? Mikey?
Oh, sure. I've got something. Just another round of thanks to David.
Thank you, Mikey. I appreciate that. I'd actually like to thank my team that worked on this. There were three individuals working over the past 3.5 weeks to pull this information together, and they really did a marvelous job. So I'll pass your comments along to them.
Oh, please do. I mean, it's as I said to you in an email over the weekend. This is factual. This is not rumor. Because one of the problems we faced both in this working group and in other working groups that I'm involved with, and I'm sure other people could echo this, is we seem to spend a lot of our time talking about rumors. You know, there is supposedly an issue. This is a terrible issue, and it affects hundreds and thousands of people. But then when you actually go looking for some evidence of the issue, you can't find anything. So the data that you've given us, it's like, well, you know, here is what people are actually talking about. Here is a list of them. That's fantastic. As you can say, right, okay, this is what we have, and this is what we're dealing with. That's so much better. Anybody have any other thoughts? No? God, you're all so quiet today. It's fantastic.
I can fix
okay.
that.
I know you could, but I'm trying desperately not to allow you to do that. Okay, then. Right. How are we doing for time, Marika?
We've already passed the hour.
Okay, so maybe we... Does anybody want us to try and continue on a little bit, or can we call it a day and let David go back to having some coffee?
This is Mikey. We've already lost James, so I think we should drop off for today.
So basically you're saying that that if James goes, you have to cut the call short, but if I were to leave, you wouldn't mind?
I didn't say that, but it's not a bad idea.
Okay, that's fine. I'm just checking. Okay, so can we call it a day? Marika, I will forward you on that thing that you were messaging me about. David, are you in? David, are you in your office, or where are you today?
Working from home at the moment, but we'll be in the office probably in about an hour or so.
Okay, that's fine. I'll probably follow up with you afterwards.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you all for your time, and
can I just confirm that we'll have a call next week?
Oh, sorry.
Glenn did send a message that we'll, you know, staff will be on a retreat that week, but as the retreat is in Los Angeles, so it will be early morning for me. I'm happy to do the call, and I think it would be good if we can continue the weekly run and make progress on things. So okay. I wanted to give with that.
So we'll have a call next week. Anybody have an issue with that?
That's okay.
No? Okay, perfect. Unless somebody contacts us in the meantime, then we will have a meeting next week. And thanks, Marika, and hopefully you have a good flight over.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yep.
Okay, bye.
Bye
now.
Bye.
Thanks, Keely.
Thank you for participating in today's conference call. You may now disconnect.